Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. I am on the road yet again, and so I'm joined by Jamie Lasanti. We'll cut right to the guest. Jamie, you and I are not together yet again, but I thought that this would be the week that we do our postseason awards. We were going to do them anyway at some point during this brief off-season period, and I figure now is as good a time as any. We still have the women's season is done. We still have the ATP Next Gen event, as well as the WTF, the regrettably named World Tour Finals for the men. But as I see it, fait accompli. We can start handing out some hardware already. We are in a little bit of flux, given some last-minute plans, but we are together via phone. So, Jamie, how are you? Welcome.
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me. I think this is a good time. You know, we're not too far towards the end of the season where everyone's ready to take a break. So we've still got everyone's attention and we can talk some tennis.
See, we are cognizant of the recency effect. We're very keen on behavioral biases. But no, I think you're right. I think that for all intents, the season is not technically over, but we can start handing out some awards. So we had it, we were going to do this anyway, so why not do it here this first week of November? I'm out of the country next week, so we'll have to scramble then. But let's get right to it, and I ask you, Jamie, for the year 2018, let's start with the men's. Who is your MVP?
I think we might be in agreement on this one, because I don't think you can choose anyone besides Novak Djokovic for this award, for this honor for 2018. We rewind to last year and we're talking about Novak Djokovic. Is he ever going to come back? Will he ever regain the form he had? And fast forward now, and it's remarkable that he is not only winning majors again, but now he's back at the top. It's incredible. Novak Djokovic, hands down, MVP.
I agree on all counts. If you had said even on July 1st that Novak Djokovic is going to be your season MVP, people would say, boy, the plot will have shifted very quickly. And that's precisely what happened. I mean, I think that underlying these rankings, these awards, there is a ranking system. And it stands to reason that the person that's compiled the most ranking points had the best season. Of course, we know, though, that is not always the case. We weight major titles superior to ranking points, but now Novak Djokovic is actually back to number one. So not only did he win two majors, Federer Nadal, obviously the other two major winners, and not only did he win more majors than anyone, but he also has a superior points haul. Again, I can't recall a season quite like this where, as you say, a year ago, and I would even say 120 days ago,
I was going to say, even in January, what was going on with this guy? Even in January,
crazy, right?
he I think he started the season and he had probably a 500 record or maybe even worse than that. I mean, he lost a handful of matches at the beginning of the season where we were still saying, you know, this was still coming over from last year and we were still kind of worried about what was going to happen. The turnaround is impressive, so I think he gets some comeback points there, but definitely the MVP.
I will go one farther. I will still remember in Indian Wells watching Djokovic lose to Taro Daniel, and the murmurs were that Andre Agassi had encouraged him not to play, both physically and emotionally. He wasn't in position to even enter the tournament. Djokovic did anyway and lost to a player who was outside the top 100 on hard courts, no less. And you sort of left there thinking, boy, we've seen this movie before, and this is not the plot that anybody wanted to see unfold. Took some bad losses in the spring. Remember, and entered clay events, wasn't successful there. Had that run in Paris, but then lost to Cecchinato. This was a rough go for the first half of the year, and then since then, it's been vintage Novak Djokovic, and now he heads to Australia, going for his third straight major. He is our MVP. He's ranked number one. What about the women, where I think there's probably a more robust discussion to be had? Who's your WTA MVP?
For sure. I think, you know, you want to say Naomi Osaka. The most recent tournament we had was the U.S. Open. You know, she really did do well. And I think her closest competitor in this award category is Simona Halep. So you can argue that Naomi Osaka deserves to be in the conversation with Halep, and that, you know, she also has the same number of majors won in 2018, you know, which she does. But I think that Halep has been on the cusp of this for so long, and she is world number one. I think that's kind of the differentiating factor here. Halep finally got over that hump, won her first Grand Slam in 2018, and I think even though it seems like it was so long ago that she did that, I think it's still, when you look back at everything, I think it's still her year. Not to put down anything that Osaka has done, but I think Halep gets the one on this one.
I would say two players reached multiple major finals on the women's side in 2018. And one of them, we forget, it's been overshadowed by other events. One of them was Serena Williams. But Halep was the other one. Remember, she had a terrific Australian Open, and just physically, she looked like a UFC fighter after that fight, after that match. See, Freudian slip. she came within a few games of beating Wozniacki, couldn't come through, but won six matches to get to the final and played valiantly. And then at the very next major at the French Open, she runs the table. She is ahead on points by more than 1,000 over number two Angie Kerber. I'm with you. We got to have some disagreement here, but you won't get it on MVP. I give it to Simona Halep. I mean, I feel like the other categories for tennis always get a little tricky because there is a sort of void for vagueness, we would say, if this were legislation. What does most improved mean? Is it a player who's just clipped their ranking? Is it a young player that has improved their status in the sport, someone like Tsitsipas? Or is it someone, and this is my winner, spoiler alert, a Basilashvili type player who has been a journeyman for years and has really taken a step? The most improved candidates for ATP, this is per their website, Cecchinato, Alex de Minaur, Kyle Edmund, who won his first title, and Tsitsipas. Again, those are sort of players at different phases in their career. I went off ballot. A bit of a strange award, but I do think there is, especially in an individual sport, there really ought to be more recognition to players who have upgraded themselves and had this mid-career elevation. I'm going with Basilashvili. Who's your pick, Jamie?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a little bit of a tough one. I think Kyle Edmund sticks out to me this year. I just feel like he kind of always played second role to Andy Murray, and this year he seemed like he really came into his own. He had some really big wins. So I think out of that category, you know, if you're naming the nominees as presented by the ATP, I think I'd go with him. But I agree that it's very strange. You know, even like a Rookie of the Year award is a weird thing in tennis.
Yeah, and also where are we drawing these lines of demarcation? Kyle Edmund, born in South Africa, resides in the Bahamas. But you're right, the top British player, top 15 player, and he did. I thought he had one of these, it wasn't quite Kournikova-esque, but it was getting to be an awful long streak of him not winning a title, and he finally broke through. Nice year for Kyle Edmund. What about most improved on the women's side? Again, we are faced with the same vagueness, but interpreting improved however you like. Who's your pick there?
I think I have to go. This is a weird one. I don't know if this, again, falls into this category, but I think she deserves some recognition somewhere in this award category is Angelique Kerber. I think her season got a little bit overlooked. You know, you go back 2016, amazing. Wow, you know, that's her breakout year. 2017, you're kind of like, uh-oh, what's going on, right? I think we forget in 2018 that she had a little bit of a revival. I mean, she picked herself back up from her 2017 season. She won Wimbledon, you know, beating Serena. And I think she kind of deserves some recognition. And her, between Osaka and Halep, she's kind of fallen through the cracks. But I want to give a little bit of a shout out to her, because I think that, you know, after having her big season and then having a not so great season, she really picked up the pieces, and I think we're going to be seeing more consistency from her.
Oh, well played. That is an interesting interpretation of improved, but certainly a radical improvement for Angie Kerber after 2017 to 2018. And you're right. I mean, you know, she finished the year. She won Wimbledon. She beat Serena Williams in a Wimbledon final, which is sort of an extra feat, and cemented her Hall of Fame bona fides, and finishes the year at number two. I'm buying that.
What about you?
I'll give you someone who actually beat Kerber quite recently. How do we feel about Kiki Bertens?
Yeah.
Who had been a solid, athletic, you know, a nice player, a veteran. Every now and then she'd reach the second week of a major. But, you know, one of those players who might get perhaps a bit lost in the draw sheet. And, you know, in the middle of her career, I don't have it in front of me. I think she's 26 years old. Turns in a very, very nice year, finishes in the top 10, and I think really established herself as a player on more than just clay. She's, again, a nice athlete, offense, defense, and this was a player who sort of hovering in a certain range and really elevated her status, and 26 years old is not, it ain't what it used to be, and I think she really sort of rewrote her career. I'll take Kiki Bertens. Newcomer is always a strange category as well. It's not like a team sport where they're very clear-cut rookies. This is my first season. But if we sort of take a broad definition of newcomer, we're not looking for the 16-year-old who entered their first pro event, but maybe newcomer in the sense that they're playing tour-level events week in, week out. Who do you like, men and women, Jamie?
That is a tough one. As I said, there is no clear, clear-cut rookie season. But I think a few names come to mind. I think Danielle Collins deserves a mention here. You know, she really did kind of just break out onto the scene. And again, because the tennis season is so long, it seems like it was forever ago that we're talking about. But she did have a nice story that, you know, she did play college tennis and did really well in Miami. I think she beat Venus Williams and made it to the semifinals before losing there. And I think for her, you know, for American tennis, I think that's a really good story. And I think it qualifies as a newcomer nomination. What about you?
Interesting. You're weighting these heavily on the senior side with Kerber as well. I guess I would go with Sabalenka, who finishes close to the top 10. Number 11, she, 20 years old, played a terrific match against one of my favorite matches of the year against Naomi Osaka in the U.S. Open. I think, barring injury, will be a top 5, if not a top 10, if not top 5 player next year. I guess Sabalenka, I mean, again, I don't know if that's technically a newcomer. We kind of sort of knew who she was, and she, you know, she didn't play doubles with Azarenka at some point, but I guess I will morph. I'll go with Sabalenka as my newcomer of the year. I think she actually won the. I think she formally won that as well as Singapore. So I'm giving you an award winner who actually has a trophy now on her shelf for that same category.
I was trying to go a little. I was trying to go off, you know, so we could have some disagreement here.
Good call.
But I agree. And, I think for her, she is young. And so that, you know, I think qualifies her that much more. And she did have a very breakout season for a young player. I think we'll be seeing more of her for sure.
Rookie of the year / newcomer year on the men's side.
This one's tough. Did you find this one a little tough? I will, looking at the nomination list for these next geners, I think Michael Moe is one that we should talk about. He's sort of been on the radar for a really long time, a few years now. And, you know, you hope that he starts to bring his ranking up. I think he's just outside the top 100 right now. But again, a 20-year-old, someone who has the body type of a player on the ATP tour that can be successful. So I say we can give a name check to Michael Moe.
Interesting. Born in Saudi Arabia, I'll have you know. Let me look
Indeed.
Here. Yeah, he finished 103. Won 6 tour level matches, got into the top 100 briefly. Interesting call. I'll go a little more conventional and take Tsitsipas, who also is 20 years old and is getting awfully close to finishing the year in the top 10. Part of this is probably gets a nod because we like the personality as well as the game. I don't know if he's technically a newcomer. We all
yeah.
knew who he was a year ago. Whenever we talked about the one-handed, you know, a year ago it was sort of he was the great exemplar of the proof that the one-handed backhand was not dying, because there was a
right.
teenager on the ascent who had a beautiful one-handed backhand. He's improved his backhand. He's also improved his stature. He's known for more than his backhand. I'm interested in Michael Moe. That's an interesting call by you.
I was going
by
the
Alexander Voski. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going by the list. Also, as you said, I think it's hard to define the newcomer. Tsitsipas is certainly deserves that, but newcomer maybe not so. But he did win a title this year. It was very impressive, and he's up to number 15 in the rankings, which is also very impressive.
As long as you are in this neighborhood, we should point out Taylor Fritz and with Taylor Fritz and Francis, there are now a likelihood of two Americans 20 and under finishing in the top 50 for the first time in a decade. Some nice young talent. But again, I mean, we've known Taylor Fritz, we've known Tsitsipas. I mean, these are not people that are technically rookies. Michael Moe, interesting call, Jamie. Let's do you know what category does not get much play in tennis, but we will give it a nod. Do you have a coach of the year?
I wouldn't say I do. I don't think I can nominate Patrick for obvious reasons.
he would win. He would win on volume, but I think there may be perhaps a disqualifying event.
I don't. Do you have one in mind?
Well, I mean, I think Andre Agassi attempted to coach Novak Djokovic, now with Grigor Dimitrov, it seems. But Andre Agassi, not a great success in the Djokovic coaching box. Djokovic goes back to gets the band back together. We will name check Marion Vida in particular. And the results kind of sort of speak for themselves. I mean, I think Marion Vida, whatever buttons he pushed, whatever coalesced, some of this may be an accident of timing, but you know what, it still happened on his watch. And I think Marion Vida, who I never thought quite got enough due, and to his credit, he was never one of these look at me coaches. He never, you know, you wouldn't see him prancing around with a satin jacket with the name of his academy on the back. He was not a self-publicizer, not a self-promoter, and I think tends to get overlooked, but he will not get overlooked on this podcast, Jamie. Marion Vida, my 2018 coach of the year.
I think Naomi Osaka's coach Sasha also kind of deserves a little bit of recognition here.
Totally.
I think he's a good one. I'll go with him.
Sasha Bain. It's superfluous J Day with Marion Vida and Sasha Bain. But no, I think you're absolutely right. And he's really an interesting case study to me as someone who came up through the ranks, who's probably best known for years and years as Serena Williams' hitting partner and the butt of her social media jokes. And then he settled into a bit more of a position of gravitas, left the Williams camp, and has worked with several players, including Karen Wozniacki.
Azarenka,
exactly. Not as a hitting partner, but as a real coach. Sort of, he had served his apprenticeship, and then he got promoted. And I think I remember, and I'll tell you a few stories. One of them at Indian Wells, I remember Naomi Osaka played an American, and I think I'm going to refrain from. I think I'm going to decline to name names because it shouldn't befall her. But some members of her camp, I think, may have been a little fuzzy on tennis etiquette, and they were actually heckling Naomi Osaka. And it really bothered her to the point of tears. And mid-match, I remember Sasha Bain essentially not coaching about X's and O's or tactics, but essentially saying, listen, I'll handle this. You can't let the crowd bother you. Don't let this heckler get in your head. That's not the kind of thing you prepare for as a coach, and I thought he handled it really solicitously and professionally. Osaka, as you'll recall, not only won that match, but then won the tournament, won Indian Wells, which at the time was her biggest title. And I thought Sasha Bain was terrific at the U.S. Open as well. And I think that part of that Serena match that didn't cover, a lot of aspects of that whole final Saturday went overlooked for obvious reasons. But I thought the fact that Sasha Bain had not just the tactical knowledge of Serena, but also knew some of the inflection points and pressure points and knew her personality and knew that maybe Serena Williams, almost 37, is going to come out right, a little shaky and a little nervous. I think Sasha Bain's preparation had a lot to do with Naomi Osaka's poise, and you might even say with the final result of that match. I think Sasha Bain, sort of knowing Serena and her tendencies so well, was an underrated storyline from that Saturday of the U.S. Open final. So yes, you and I are in agreement. WTA Coach of the Year, Sasha Bain. Do you have a particular match? There's always a recency effect with this, but you have a match of the year. I mean, it feels like it was 1979. I mean, so much has happened since then. But I will say the Holland, and just because I was there in person, I think probably added to it as well. But the Halep Lauren Davis match.
Yes.
15-13 in the third set at the Australian Open was just a terrific battle. It was a lot of contrast, even though the two players actually have fairly similar games. It was offense, it was defense. Neither player has a huge weapon they could rely on. And I thought Lauren Davis, unfortunately, that match seems to have taken something out of her. I don't even think I can look this up as I speak. I don't even believe she is. I'm curious what Lauren Davis's ranking is now, because she was, flirting with the top 30 at the time. And I think, unfortunately, we see this sometimes. Here come our boxing comparisons. But sometimes these matches of attrition, these long matches, really can take players out of it. Lauren Davis is now ranked number 196.
No, that's right? Her doubles.
That can't be right.
That's her doubles.
WTA website. Come on.
252.
So Lauren Davis is ranked 252. Hard to believe that 10 months ago, she played what I think was the match of the year and came within a few points of taking down the number one player in the world at a major. So Lauren Davis has had a rough go of it since then, but credit her. She played a terrific match against Simona Halep in Australia. I'm running sort of, I'm doing a mental quick catalog as I think about this. You know, I thought the Australian Open's women's final was a terrific match. I mean, overall, I think there were a lot of really nice matches, quality matches. I mentioned Sabalenka, Osaka at the U.S. Open.
Right.
I think you can point to a few matches at Wimbledon. I thought the French Open final, Sloane Stephens and Simona Halep, was great stuff. I really think overall this was a really strong year for women's tennis, and unfortunately the women's final at the U.S. Open is sort of what the casual fan will remember most. But I think the women's game really had some fine moments.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before. You can go back, and there's always those third, fourth round matches on the women's side of the tournament that end up just being electrifying, that you really look back and you're like, wow, the competition on the women's side of the game is remarkable. And I think that is great for the game. I think the men's side still has the big four at the top, which is kind of maybe not allowing for that as much. But I enjoy those matches where the Lauren Davis match or those kind of things where people who may not always pay attention all of a sudden are tuning in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that you say that, I think, is revealing. There wasn't really, I mean, I guess you could, for sheer length, obviously Kevin Anderson and Isner, but I don't think that, including the players themselves, I don't think anyone necessarily sees that as a classic. Nadal-Dominic team at the U.S. Open was terrific. Of course, it ended in the infomercial hours, so I don't know how many people, at least in the U.S., saw the end of that. But no, I think back to your other point, I kind of got the feeling that this was the year that things turned a little in terms of perception, and there was a sense of, boy, Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer are terrific. We're lucky to watch all three of them at once. These are three great titans of the sport. But I do feel like the gallery got a little impatient in the sort of, where's the competition? And we love these guys, but really at ages 37, in the case of Nadal, 32, but probably far older in terms of body and mileage years, and then in Djokovic with this comeback that we've talked about, shouldn't someone, whether it's Zverev, who continues to struggle in best of five matches, or whether it's Dominic Thiem, Grigor Dimitrov, who really had a dismal year after a very nice end to 2017. I got the feeling that 2018, this was the year of the big three are amazing, don't get us wrong, but boy, where is that subclass that are pushing these guys? Where is Marin Cilic? Where is Zverev? Where is Dimitrov? Where is Nishikori? I feel like there was a certain restlessness of great for the big three, but the competition, really, you wish it were a bit stronger. And I think the women's side had sort of, I keep calling it a sneaky good year, that Serena's comeback, her two major finals, and obviously the regrettable U.S. Open final are the storylines to the casual fan. But I think people that follow tennis recognize that this was really a strong year with some really nice performances. Naomi Osaka was a big revelation, but Wozniacki and Halep winning their first major helps as well. Sloane Stephens coming back and having on balance quite a strong year. Kerber, as you mentioned, I think women's tennis is in a deceptively strong position going forward, certainly looking to 2019. Let's sort of end there. What if I said quick themes you're looking forward to in this new season 2019, what comes to mind?
Well, this is a weird place to start for that, but I'll throw out some names and then get to this. But Serena, of course. Can Djokovic continue? Nadal in his injury and where he's at right now, how does that affect him in 2019? Federer kind of feels a little bit of a little bit of a drought right now. So can we see him kind of get back to the top, compete with Djokovic now that he's back at that level? I think that's going to be a really exciting rivalry in 2019. One person I did want to mention is John Isner. We didn't really talk about him. You briefly did, but I think he deserves some sort of mention here, only because at his age at his point in his career, he really had a great year. And I think that deserves some recognition. I'm going to double check his ranking before I say it right now. But yeah, he is. He's up to number 10, which kind of has been floating around at that point for a while, but I think he really made some strides at majors this year, which has always kind of been the thing where he falls short. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do as a new father in 2019.
No, I think that's a good point, Jamie. I think the other thing is John Isner had a really, really dismal start to the year. And in keeping with one of our favorite themes, one of the beauties of tennis is it does not take much to rewrite scripts. And he goes to Miami again. The first 90 days of the year were really rough for John Isner. I think he won one match before Miami, because I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, just a rough year to start. And then all of a sudden he wins Miami kind of sort of out of nowhere. And he's off and running and wins a lot of matches, gets to the Wimbledon semifinals, got through a lot of matches riding his serve, but finishes now in the top 10. He'll go to London, so he is assured of finishing the year in the top 10. And 32 ain't what it used to be either. And nice year for John Isner. Glad you name-checked that. I think as far as 2019, I think you hit on the big ones. To me, I think where Naomi Osaka goes from here and basically how she is going to deal with a set of pressures that we've said this before are unlike, I'd be careful using the word unprecedented, but Naomi Osaka is about to enter a world that few players enter. And hovering over all of this is the 2020 Olympics. Hovering all over this is Japan as a commercial market. everywhere she goes. I mean, the stories I've heard already about cameras following her all over this Asian swing. As I understand, she's opening a school in Haiti, where the homeland of her father. She's opening a school in Haiti, and the Japanese media is all over it. It's going to be interesting to see how she deals with this new stature. And this also, and I say this completely to her credit, this is not someone who necessarily relishes fame. This is not someone who necessarily has aspired to red carpet treatment. So I think Naomi Osaka will be a story to watch. I think you're right. I mean, Federer, Serena, Djokovic, Nadal, sort of whatever happens with them is going to be interesting.
I think you can throw Sloane Stephens in there as well.
We shall. Sloane Stephens, no, you're right. Sloane Stephens is sort of tennis's great wild card.
Right.
Did not win a major in 2018, but in a way had just, I mean, I think
she played really well.
If you told her this would be your, she'd sign up for it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think I was surprised at how well she played at the WTA Finals in Singapore. Just because, like you said, she is a wild card. Is she going to show up? I think that bodes well for her for 2019. So we'll see what happens there.
All right, very good. A lot of storylines. Glad we got these awards done. I've got to bounce. We've got to figure out a podcast strategy for next week since I'll be overseas. But, Jamie, it is always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Love talking tennis with you.
Maybe we'll do this in person in our offices one of these days.
That sounds good. I'm lonely here in the studio.
I was going to say, do people miss me?
Yeah, people walk by and it's a little strange. Looks like I'm talking to myself here, so.
All right, we're going to fix that. All right, that does it for this week. Thanks to you, Jamie Lasanti, for taking some time. Hope people enjoy this. If people were so interested, where might they subscribe to this podcast, Jamie?
They can go on Apple Podcasts or wherever they get their podcasts, and they can subscribe and leave a review for us. Let us know.
Very good.
Let us know about who you want to see on this podcast in 2019.
Yeah, keep the guest suggestions coming. Again, sometimes they're counterintuitive, and they're more often than not terrific. So anyway, that does it for this week. Thank you to Jamie. We'll figure out a plan for next week. Have a good week, everyone. Take care.